Let me make sure. Okay.
I call the December 3rd, 2019 Committee of the Whole meeting of the Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
7:01. Member Boren?
Yes.
Member Covey is absent. Member London is absent right now. Member Underdunk?
Here.
Chair Brooks?
Here.
Okay.
And there are no members of the public in attendance, so we will move directly to our discussion on Watts Recreational Center. And Lisa Shepherd will lead that discussion.
All right. So, as I indicated in our packet, the Board of Commissioners asked us to develop a facility master plan for the Watts Recreation Center. And part of this process was to hold a community meeting to both educate the community on the improvements for Watts and to hold and to garner feedback from residents about the current facility and the future improvements for that. So attached, I put the presentation in a minute. So last week, we held a meeting with the Watts Advisory Group, so on November 26th. We had over 20 members in attendance at that meeting, so we had great participation. I think in the last 4 years, 5 years, we've had three. So it was very exciting to see the excitement for Watts and the engagement for that. So we wanted to go over a little bit about give you a feedback from the advisory group and the community meeting going forward, and then we'll ask representatives from White to give us the conceptual plan. So basically the goals of our meeting were to gather and review community feedback to aid you in the development of the viable plan for the future of Watts Recreational Center. The committee reviewed the draft conceptual plan.
As you know, we did a survey to the community just over a month ago, asking them what they thought about continued operations and how important that is. 81% said it was important or very important. During the community meeting and the advisory group, we did hear from more than 50 people in the audience that retaining the current experience of the ice rink is important to them. Nobody said no. Part of the community input, we heard a lot of things that kind of lined up with the Park District's mission statement, from learn to skate at school, unique facility, friends, memories, winter, under the stars, outside at night, special job, leadership opportunities, memories, active in the winter, magical and unique, all ways that people said that Watts was special to them and their family. We also heard from the community that there needs to be improvements surrounding kids' club and camp space that could be looked at off-season use of the facility in addition to what we currently have. The atmosphere inside and outside needs to be looked at. The quality of the ice and the skating experience needs to be looked at. Anything we do should be in a sustainable way. Parking should be looked at, and we should also consider to continue being a good neighbor. We also asked Ms. Rantham they would like to see during the off-season of the rinks. We heard things like rollerblading, roller skating, sports fields, adult fitness classes, portable bike, scooter, skateboard circuits.
So at the advisory committee meeting, we informed the members of the community that obviously despite our best efforts, we know that elements of the rink's equipment is nearing the end of its useful life, and that we know we're going to need to make an investment moving forward to confirm the continuity of those operations. So we did receive an assessment via our contract with White from B32 Engineering of the specific ice rink related equipment. We were very excited to hear that the engineer said that they believe we have a minimum of 10 additional years on our compressors and cooling floor. So that number takes that out of really discussion for a project at this point. So we did get back information on the dasher boards, the water main, the shingle roof, things that were known quantities to us with pricing attached to that. So the conditions assessment was a great document in aiding us in future planning.
As far as the programming space, as we talked about before, the recreational space is at capacity with no room to expand. Watts provides their only dedicated age-appropriate space for our kids club, which is our before and after school program. As you know, we actually turned families away the last 2 years due to lack of space and facility. The facility also requires updates to meet current or modern ADA standards. We also asked the community about the importance of a strong And quality before and after school program, 68%, that was important, very important to them.
So in the meeting, we presented to the community a concept plan for the ice rink. We have Matt and Anya here from White Design tonight to take you guys through that concept plan. Matt and Anya and their team have worked on over 50 ice rinks, NHL level, community level, university level, so they really have run the gambit on all the types of projects that are out there, and they're very good experts for us to have with us tonight. So if you guys want to just come up, we'll start with the concept of the first floor. So you have in front of you in your packet this exact slide and paper, if that's easier for you to follow along.
We're missing one person anyway, so.
This is page 8, right?
Yeah, page 8. So if you guys want to tear out the existing, do you guys want to do that?
Yeah.
So.
Do you want to look at the existing or not? I don't think so. Okay. So we'll just go right to the concept.
Hi,
come on in. Perfect timing.
Sorry.
This is Matt and Anya, White Design.
Hi, guys.
We just reviewed really what was in your packet so far. So.
Okay.
Well, this is a new plan, and the first plan is not going to see much change compared to the existing one, except we identified some key issues that were on the outline, programming space, lack of additional space, no ADA, it's not up to ADA codes currently. There's some additional smaller things, like for example, there's a little bit of confusion which one is the main entry currently, and we learned this one is used as the main entry because it's user reception desk. However, there is no vestibule. Currently, this is the main door, and there is a window in the wall which opens up, and when people come in, they see this much of a opening. Mm-hmm. So what we designed a vestibule here. We enclosed the existing space that is outdoor space that is under a roof, like this triangle canopy space. We created a vestibule with automatic doors, which are great for ice rinks because people are hauling this case hockey sticks and everything, and the last thing they want to do is fight with the doors, and especially with the double doors here. So it also created a little bit of a buffer space for the receptionist and the entry area. Also, the current staff office was a few steps up. It was raised, not ADA. And it is very difficult to rent out this case currently through this little window to pay to rent it out. To go around and realize the skates are too small or too big, to go back and get the new pair. So we created better flow. We opened up the desk so it's more inviting, more open, it's accessible from the front but also from the side. So like if it needs to happen, if the change needs to happen, it can happen right over here. The staff office is over here. It's hard to see on this plan here, but it has windows to see out every single way. Out to the rink, out to this bigger rink that is here. There is a window to see into the reception area. There's a window to see to the lobby. So the staff person can kind of serve double duty, can double up for the receptionist over here. This case storage retail is over here. These spaces over here, there was a need to create more kind of like a loungy feel in this entry space over here. So this is what we are intending on doing for parents to sit, wait for the kids when they're skating and just have a nicer atmosphere. This skate room over here is more dedicated to, okay, we're just gonna go to the ice, we're gonna drop our stuff at the lockers here on the benches to change the skates to boots, etc. There's small lockers here, like wallet lockers, for example, you know, to drop the keys, the wallets, the phone, you know, some stuff that can be locked. This is the viewing area, basically a counter, where maybe like USB ports, you know, parents like to go with sometimes laptop or a phone and work a little bit and watch and take pictures. So this is sort of that server over here. This area over here, the men and women toilets, we're not changing too much. We're just updating them for current ADA codes. It's very minimal. Right now, there's a big kitchen area that kind of stretches out from here and extends and loops around. And it's not being used, you know, this way anymore. And we see it in all the facilities, I have to say. So we are converting this. Oh, thank you. So what we see a lot, you know, when spaces are being rented out for the parties, you still need a little space with the counter, with the fridge, maybe with microwave to bring the food or catering and put it into this room, warm it up or keep it cool. And so we converted this into this kind of a space. It's accessible from the corridor, drop it off, but also from the party room. So this makes sense, it's a typical space. We have vending here, there's a lounge area, coffee counter stage just updated, you know, a little bit more modern and up to date over here. And the new big thing in this plan is the elevator. Elevator is really something that will activate all the floors in this building. And this will provide access to the second floor that is currently not ADA. So this is a really, really big thing. This program room will have to get redone, but it will stay in the current size with new finishes and new everything because our plan is to add the space on the second floor. And this, because this building, this property is kind of like landlocked, we cannot expand to the size. You will see it on the site plan when you look at this. So the only really good way is to go up. And we see this opportunity. So as you see over on the top of this plan, there is a vestibule. There's also an extra stair that will take you upstairs. So what we are doing upstairs, you will see it in a moment, we're duplicating this whole configuration. So the kids club that currently people are being sent away because there is not enough room, we're duplicating it can be exactly the same program, it could be something new, but it could be duplicated. There is room for more kids, more people. This vestibule and the dash line shows the canopy. This is the pickup and drop off place. So it provides a space for kids to wait either outside or inside and be picked up. And also this extra stair that we have to add for exiting, it also gives the direct access to the room upstairs. The drink equipment and Zamboni rooms, they are pretty much staying because in the report, as you can see, they said this like multiple times, the maintenance was so good that the life expectancy is just way too long. So doesn't make sense to use these spaces for any program and, you know, move the equipment somewhere else. We are also updating these two bathrooms because right now there's two toilet rooms in each one and they're like this wide. So they cannot stay this way. And especially with the hockey sticks and, you know, the skates, they're not usable. So this program room space, we treat it as a precious room. This is very beautiful. So we're just doing the minor touch up so the content is going to stay the way it is. Am I missing anything on the floor?
No, I guess I don't need to talk. No, you did it. I'm scared about it. To this point, you know, a lot of what we focused on is we knew in order to really get most use out of that second floor, it had to be upgraded to allow access and accessibility up there. Mm-hmm. Right now, which meant an elevator. Well, we didn't want to do it just for the small footprint that was up there because it really didn't make sense. You know, if we're going to be investing in that, you know, type of a amenity, let's make that second floor really more usable. So that was kind of what led us to our approach here. And she's right when she said landlocked. You know, trying to put a new program room anywhere around the building would cause you to have to almost go through one of the rooms to get to it, or go to the exterior to get to it. It just didn't seem practical.
Sure.
We do have a second floor. So currently, this is second floor only. So when I said we're duplicating the space, this is exactly what it means. So we're adding this entire room into the program space. And this room is a multi-use space, and it's about 1,200 square feet that can be used for any kind of activity. And it has enough nooks and corners, and there can be different things going on over here. We are also adding, there's currently just one toilet room, also not ADA accessible, and but there's a tummy, there's a chase over here, so it makes sense to add two more of them, to update the existing one and add another one over here to get another pair. It is required because we're adding more program space, so we have to up the count of the plumbing fixtures as well that go with it.
So what I really like about that, if you go back to that one, what I really like about this concept is it's very open. So we could do different things with, for example, bookcases for walls and things like that. So after Kids Club is done, we can push those things out of the way and use it for other purposes. But in the meantime, for Kids Club, we could develop areas like a Lego area, an art area, homework area, science area, things like that, so we can give those different areas that they can, whatever meets the kids' needs, they can move them around, and we can be very creative in that programming space.
So furnishings will be movable, and the storage space.
Yes, and
the storage.
So
some of that.
Yeah, and so you know, some of it may be permanent. Say the pink area, we might leave always for Kids Club, but maybe say the green area. We haven't defined that yet. We're way too early in the process to figure that out. We'll have to get more input from Kids Club parents and things like that. But who's not saying that? In the green area in the closet, we bring out ping pong or foosball or stuff like that to program that area in the weekends or, you know, things like that. So,
may I ask a quick question? Will the flooring be flexible so that, let's say, you want to do a dance class in there or something like that? If there's some sort of reason for something that we don't have room at Takeoff or you want to do an extra class, is there something that can be done so that it will be flexible for other uses other than
that's a good question.
So this is a question. Like, depending, of course, you know, flexibility is always a good idea. Also, we're looking at this way because now there is an elevator. So kids or people in skates, they may just wander around.
I was going to ask about that.
And,
yes.
You know, we want to have flooring that can sustain the skates. You know, rubber flooring is the best for this. And this is what you currently have in the entire facility, including the Kids Club area. So this is actually not bad flooring. This is actually very good and very durable floor type. So
for lots of uses.
For lots of uses. Mm-hmm. And plus this could be used, you know, if the kids want to go upstairs or people want to go upstairs in this case.
Want skaters upstairs? I mean, is there a way of disabling the elevator during times where there's skaters just so they cannot go upstairs?
Facility is kind of... This could be skaters there during Kids Club, too, so I don't know if you could necessarily disable it.
I mean, you can go to Watts on a weekend and somebody's walking around out in front of the building in ice skates. Yeah. So sometimes you don't necessarily have people kind of engaging brain before starting to walk around the facility.
And right.
Once you move into, like, putting up metallic screens in front of staircases and things like that, you start to really start getting involved in, like, fire code and how you're going to manage those. And, you know, the answer isn't, no.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you can, but I think, is it really practical? I would say no.
Okay, well, I was just curious, because I saw the elevator and all of a sudden thought, well, that's where I would go. If I were kids skating and I was there for a few hours, I'd say, I think I'm going to go upstairs. See what's going on up there.
Check it out.
It's not to say if no staff is up there at, say, 6 o'clock, that we would have the capacity to close that wing down, without doubt. So there's sometimes we will.
Sure.
But if we have Kids Club going on, there's staff up there. They might get up there, and then we might say, no, you have to go back down, but there's a chance they come out with their skates.
Right.
Or maybe there's a party, and we need a party room, and we're using it for a party room.
Right.
You talk about the multi-use. You know,
yeah, that's another.
It's huge. Yeah.
You're probably better off anticipating they're going to get up there and make sure your flooring is durable.
Yeah, that's good.
Like
good
putting
point.
In a wood floor,
very
I don't think
point.
Would be a good
no.
idea.
No.
Ballet, you know, we thought about it before, but it would get destroyed, no doubt about it.
Because it would be really nice to have a second gym and for Kids Club too, but obviously that requires a wood floor.
But would a rubber floor accommodate, I mean, gym-type activities?
It does now. So the kids' club, after all of the dance programs,
good,
from like 5 o'clock after they finish at Watts, they tend to go into the multi-purpose room, and they play, like, dodgeball, or they'll play, like, some kind of activity.
Yeah, that floor is perfect
for that. So it's fine for that.
Yeah.
And dance programs, we have ballet that happens on the rubber floor. It's
not
ideal, but, you know, a kindergarten ballet class, they're not at the point where they need to be.
It's younger dance students anyway, so they're fine.
Right, yeah. Okay, good.
I just noted that it might be awkward to access the storage room from the multi-use room, and I wonder if you could put a door on both sides.
That's an easy thing.
Yes,
this is
that might be best off of you, actually. You can go into either function.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're right, because you'd lose so much, you lose space if you put
two doors. In the second door, you're going to lose a lot of the storage,
yeah,
but I'd rather relocate it.
Yeah,
the
wall. Mm-hmm.
Good. Good idea. And I believe those will have to be gender neutral bathrooms. They're listed as men and women's, but I believe with this new state law, they have to be
gender
neutral.
State law, exactly. Whenever you have unisex, you have to have
two. We had two.
But you don't designate right now.
Yeah. Okay.
So, in case you were wondering why the elevator is where it is, it is very tricky to connect all the three floors. And we looked at many different places and locations, and the basement actually dictates where it needs to be, because it needs to be along somewhere of this wall to give it access to the basement. That's why it is where it is. So, and now, as I mean, it activates the team rooms a little bit more. We're not planning on upgrading them to the same extent of the other spaces. However, there's access to this. There's also potential for additional bathrooms over here, and these spaces are not used the same way they used to be. So they may open up the possibility of four additional bedrooms on this floor.
And you could just put one in for this square footage?
For convenience. Yes. So as long as you have enough.
You've met your count elsewhere.
You met your count somewhere else.
Okay.
We did go back to one. We did get some feedback about the skate sharpening room, because it really appears to be much larger in this plan. That's really where most of our mechanicals are coming in the building. So it's a cave. So it's not something that could be easily captured in, say, be a third team room or a shower room or something like that. It really, it's very deceiving, the size of it on a print versus when you actually go into the space.
Okay. So, there's like pipes and stuff.
Pipes, sump pumps, things like that.
And this is a site plan, and I believe you have to rotate the building right now in your head, because the site plan is kind of longer, so we have to rotate it.
At least.
So this is the main entry over here. So to address the issue with, like, you know, which one is the main entry, we were proposing widening this this sidewalk over here, just to give it more presence, and removing this little plaza area that's currently over here, but still giving the benches that are dedicated, putting them over here, and also adding some bike racks. And we are saying 8 to 20, we're going to decide how many. But we were told the kids are using the bike racks currently, and there is no place to put them. So this is the idea for the main entry. And also, when you look on the other side, when you talk about the preschool kids club entry, this creates really very nice dedicated entry for the kids, for the parents to drop them off, and for the kids to come in. And we know the parking is also a concern currently, because there's not enough spaces. So, in addition to adding vehicle parking on the other side of the road, here and here, we're proposing adding the parking on this side, which will be great overflow parking, because we heard that people are parking along the road whenever they can't find a spot to go to the rink. But also during the school hours, when kids are being dropped off, this is a perfect place for parents to just drive up, bring the child in, and drive away, and the same with the pickup. So we're kind of creating this zone, kids club pickup drop off zone over here, that is away from the main drive. It would require moving the soccer field a little bit north, but there is room. We feel like there is enough room for the same size that was indicated on the drawings of the text. The additional things that we were doing to the site, we were enclosing with the fence. Currently, there is a gate over here, and that's it. And Zamboni goes through here, and there's some movement going on. So we're enclosing. We're extending the sidewalk to go to the tree boxes over here because we know that parents are using them to view it, to see their kids on the ramp. We're proposing adding some heaters in it, just to make it a little bit more comfortable, and also enclosing this area with the fence. On the other side, we know the parks are flying into the neighborhood, so we're proposing adding a 30-foot tall park fence. On the other side. And of course, the dasher boards are all new for both ice rinks over here, and we're switching the lights to LED lights as well.
Is that not something the neighbors would want, or would they think it's an abomination?
There's already something there that's kind of not quite that tall. We have had some feedback from some neighbors that they don't like the pucks. We've had some feedback from other neighbors that they have said that ice rink has been there since the 70s. I moved in and I can live with a few pucks in my backyard. So we've kind of had feedback both ways, Lisa, is that?
We have, exactly.
So, you know, there's one or two people who have more of an issue, mostly people who live on the side of the studio rink right now because the main rink has the scoreboard. So through general regular hockey play, you don't lose a lot of pucks over a 20-foot net, which is what's there right now. But when you put something out there that's a challenge to shoot the puck over, that becomes the challenge. So I don't know of a lot of people who can shoot a puck over a 30-foot net. The net we have extended the net this season, so we have about a 24-foot net now for the first time. So that's kind of an answer, I guess. Yes and no.
Interestingly, the advisory group, their feedback was, you don't need a net. That's the first thing they said. The neighbors can live with it. You know, but there was no neighbors there that lived right there next to it. There were neighbors in the area. Surprisingly, they said no to the parking lot. They're like, we don't need a parking lot. We've been here forever. We can walk. It's not too far. They love the improvements on the road. Yeah. The additional parking on there, they thought was great. But the actual parking lot, they're like, we don't need that. That was very interesting.
That was the most interesting thing, because in the first meeting, somebody, and this is what happens when one assertive voice says, and there's parking, and I have to walk a block with my hockey stick or whatever that was trying for them. But then somebody in this larger group said, you know, there's never a problem with parking. And then everyone spoke up, no, there isn't really a problem with parking. And then they sort of said, does anyone think we need parking? And there was not a single person thought they needed parking. So
except for the street parking, they love that. But
they love because those will be additional spaces.
That was a great idea, they said.
Yeah, they were trying to be practical about things as well. So
when I looked at the plan, my concern was it would just create traffic backups. Because people dropping their kids off.
Right, would sit there, right?
They'll come off the road, they'll make that run right turn, and then you'll end up with 25 cars lined up into the road.
Right, exactly. So it could cause a worse problem than there is now, right?
Yeah.
We could always do designated, like, 5-minute parking in some of those spots for, like, drop off and pick up for our recreational activities. So if someone just is parking there for 5 minutes running and getting their kids from kids club or a recreation program or skating and they're coming right back out, mm-hmm. I've seen it. It's hard to enforce that, but most of the time people, unless they're desperate, kind of really let that spot go. So we could do something like that on there. But they really like the street parking. Other than that, as far as advisory feedback, they really liked the plan. Mm-hmm. They thought it was great. There's some that said, oh, can't we make the old entrance that is more prominent? Can't you just make that the entrance into the building? We're like, the problem with that is the same problem we probably had at the beach, is that people can go down that and they can there's no way to stop them from paying. So right now they come in our main entry that's marked, there's a physical stop. they pay, and then they go in. So that we kind of explain that. They're like, oh, that makes sense. They, you know, they just thought, oh, there's an entry there. Why do we have to do that? But once we explain that, they're like, oh. I think they I really liked when you come in, and sometimes there's a backlog for people getting skates, and there's not enough room. So I really like that side skate window. So if we're really busy, they can pay, and they say, okay, go around and get your skates. Here, here's a token. Go around and get your skates, and they go over and get your skates, and they're not blocking that whole entry. Because believe it or not, there's sometimes a real backlog there. So that's I really love that. And I like that the staff members downstairs around everything. So they, right now, the staff member, the manager on duty or whatever is upstairs, and they really can't see if there's a backlog in the front. They need help. They have to be called this way. Someone can see it. I thought that was a great idea for that, too. So
is that original door then going to not even exist?
Or do exist. It requires for exit.
Yeah, for emergency.
For emergency.
Yeah.
Okay, so cause my question was, what would be the pickup procedure for classes there? Because right now that door is utilized, and would you have them utilize that door still or walk around?
They'd still probably use that door.
They would still use that door, okay. Mm-hmm.
For pickup, so that would be the exit door, you know, so.
So the teacher would have a key to it and open it up the same way they kind of currently do it.
Okay.
We, that's what we, I think, would happen.
Yeah, I think that makes more sense because otherwise it, they're exiting when the rink's open.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And then if they had to walk around, they'd have to go through children.
And we don't want them doing that. The kids club. Yeah, we don't want that. So we'd probably utilize that door.
Going away.
It's going away as far as the prominence of it. You see there's still a sidewalk there.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing is drawing people's eye to the wider sidewalk to enter the building for the first time. But for pickup, they'll get really used to if they pick up their child there.
Time,
yeah.
And it's kind of done and over with.
Right.
I hope there's another question. So the soccer field, that none of that whole side is South School property?
Actually, it's most of that property is ours. There's maybe a little bit close to school, but most of that property is ours.
Is that going to be an issue? Because it looks like it backs up.
Mm-hmm. We do great intergovernment. We let them use our field during the day, so there's great cooperation. But again, if we're not going to do the parking lot, it's really a moot point if it doesn't move.
Because I would hate to see them lose that little
I mean, for the parking, I would say, to me, there's not line off parking, but I'm there at times that are very busy for pickup.
Like
Friday. Yeah, or really any time I'm there. Like twice a week for pickups, but who's really
going to
use that parking
in
South School?
Right, and why spend all that money for the teachers to park there? So how are you going to, how would we prevent that from teachers parking in that lot? Because that's exactly what would happen.
And hopefully,
I think that is what would happen.
The angled parking will make your situation better.
How many spaces is that?
Yeah, how many are we adding? Do you know? Because that was a question.
There's 23 there.
No, just on the road.
We know what the new count is. We'd have to subtract what might be out there now.
Okay. Because mm-hmm.
13 exists.
13 exists, but it's really, I think, 11.
And there's a fire hydrant right there, which eliminates.
There's a lot of illegal parking that goes on there, so I think it's a hard number because when you go to Watts during pickup, there might be 30 cars there and there might be 16 illegally parked cars.
Mm. Right.
So that's probably a number that we need to look into as we go forward.
Are you moving curbs? It just doesn't seem wide enough to have.
Are you going to have to move the sidewalk?
The sidewalk.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You can see that the parking spaces are over
is that,
the current sidewalk.
Do you know where the street right-of-way is, or are you just congestion?
Oh, that would be in the village right-of-way. That would have to be something. That parkway is part of the village right-of-way. That's correct. Mm-hmm. So that would have to be something that would have
and
to
And then we'd have to move the... grant the village an easement for the walkway.
Yeah, so that's those are hurdles we have to go through. That's if we have money to do that. That's kind of one of those things that maybe.
And that actually could be done in another phase.
Correct. Absolutely.
We
exactly.
Can see how well it works.
Exactly. That's what some of this would have to be phased in. Cause,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions?
Do we have any conceptual idea of the cost of this?
Well, that's going to come in a little bit there, Dudley. Dudley, we have to do our next phase of our discussion. This is just showing you the plans. Don't jump ahead. Don't jump ahead yet, Dudley.
They may talk someone else back.
Jeez. Okay.
Getting ready for Lisa making that face.
You know the one.
I'm a little concerned with the... I understand what you said about the difficulty of locating the elevator. I'm a little concerned with the entrance to the elevator being jammed in that corner behind the table and the vending. I wonder how realistic it is to have that table there, for instance, or I don't know whether the elevator door could be in the vestibule.
Yeah,
but
I mean, these are the furniture, right?
Yeah.
So like,
the furniture can move.
What you're saying is like right here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying it's going to be awkward if there's...
We were thinking about putting this from the vestibule, but again, this is the basement.
Yeah, it has to go just straight down.
It has to go to the basement, so that's dictating our...
If you imagine four adults sitting at that table with their skates on, people are going to be tripping over them.
Well, we can move this table.
Well, hopefully they'll be facing it, yeah.
You can move the table, that's just...
Yeah.
You can reconfigure that.
Yeah. Okay.
Conceptually, you're just showing the idea, I think, of the lunch, different style in this room.
Nobody taller than 5 feet can sit at the table.
First of all, elevators are used specifically, I mean, kids can go up the stairs.
Right.
Right? I mean, if it's kids' club, they're not all needing to go to the elevator to go upstairs. I can't fathom a time where there's crowds, like it's not an office building where there's just crowds of people in the morning trying to get up.
Yeah.
So
there's like a code requirement for how much clearance there has to be in front of the door, the 36 inches.
An elevator?
Sweet.
Yeah, 48.
So
4 feet, basically, you wouldn't have any furniture close to 4 feet from the door. Yeah. So
right.
We have the clearance. I understand what you're saying. It just doesn't feel like there's comfortable amount of space.
So it would be like four tiles on this floor would have to be, because these are 18-inch tiles, right?
18-inch
tiles, so maybe 3.5 tiles would have to be clear in front of the door.
Yeah, right. So that's something we would work around then.
And I think it can be moved a little bit this way, because this is a new wall, we can shift it a little bit. We're trying to reuse whatever is possible, like for example, like existing doors. But the 45 degrees on the plan, existing, so we didn't want to encroach on the door and...
Well, you do raise a good point, though. If those doors in the kitchenette are opening the way you say they are, that space behind them is...
Oh, yeah, the space is completely...
Kind of wasted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you have like this much space that we can still shift it.
Is the intention to utilize only the second floor for Kids Club, or are you still utilizing this bottom room for Kids Club?
We've thought about multiple. So, right now, Kids Club, in its current form, could probably use... what it's got multiplied by two. So we have four kids potentially graduating in the program next year, and we have a whole Beluga's classroom and Children's Circle that are starting to panic that there's no room. So, you know, the program could grow to...
Our intention is eventually the program grows to that whole space. That's a good potential.
To the whole...
Upstairs and that current space.
And that current space, but not the front space.
And maybe the front space we use right now for general recreation programs, and then they go in after they're done. So it's usually dance and stuff like that. So our hope is just use that program room and upstairs, and then leaving the other blue program room, so the fireplace room, I call it, for other recreational programs.
Right.
Okay.
But right now, kindergarten through sixth grade or whatever is all in the same room, too.
Yeah.
And the older kids do not like school.
So our hope is to split those kids off and
give their own space. Two floors and how you're utilizing that.
Yeah.
Again, we'll work all those details out. Those are still, to be determined as we go along.
We know any program we run at Watts after school at South is going to be popular, so we could add additional programming too. So dance classes or after school programs, because South we're pretty much in every room that they'll let us in South.
Mm-hmm. We don't feel there will be any problem programming in this space. And filling that capacity, yeah.
I was just curious.
Yeah.
How
you
envisioned it.
Yeah.
We want it flexible because summer we're going to transition to have our older kids there for Action Quest and potentially some kind of other camps as well because we're out of space here.
Yeah.
So we need multi-use space. I think that's pretty clear
that
we have to be able to flip it over per season or depending on what's going on there.
And I saw some of the elaborate comments about what people wanted to add.
Well, we made it very clear that was not in our mission.
Yeah.
Kind of stomp that out really, really quick.
But I do have a question. I don't think there's capacity here. Is there a capacity to do any kind of fireplace?
Someone asked.
We would love one. I don't know.
I don't know if we can afford that. I'm going to be honest with you.
Outside.
Or inside.
There is a fireplace.
Yeah. They're more talking like a little pot stove type of little wood burning enclosed ski chalet.
Matt would say for the right price.
Yes.
That's what we talked about.
And kids could not burn themselves on this, and we would not be able to
do anything.
I mean, that's the kind of thing
they could. You'd put on
a gas fire. Yes.
Yeah.
Got to care of the cost.
Okay. Before we start adding on, if you really look at the area, there's really not a place to put a fireplace without giving up other space in that area, because you have to have the safety zone around it and things like that. I mean, anything's doable, but...
And then you'd have the vent up through the second floor, so you'd be losing second floor programming space, or
maybe a fire pit at the runway might be a better option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be kind of cool.
I mean, there may be a time when we won't be able to have fire.
Yeah, it's very true.
Well, in California, they've already outlawed natural gas, so you can't no more natural gas hookups.
Right, that's true.
So, yeah.
Those are the old fireplaces.
Like fireplaces.
So, no more fun.
I mean,
fun
is over.
But
thank you.
Okay, thank you.
One more question.
Go ahead.
There are three access to the second floor.
Correct.
Three staircases. And the
two
staircases and an elevator.
Wait a minute.
Yes, the other staircase goes to the basement.
Yeah.
Oh, the one
goes down.
One
in the middle.
The other one goes
so
down.
Would you just point out which staircase is existing?
So this is the existing, the narrow one.
Okay.
This is the elevator.
And that's probably required by the fire code.
Correct.
Right.
Okay. We definitely
need to. Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
I have a really silly question. Are there any windows on the second floor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. The existing program room has windows facing Randolph, facing the studio rink, and currently facing the mechanical roof back there.
Just wondering, because it doesn't show anything on here, and I just envision like this dark.
Put neon lights.
All those little spots.
Actually, my office is up there. During the renovation, we moved all our administrative offices upstairs at Watts, and all of our registration and recreation offices to the lower part in the program room.
So these are actual windows.
And daycare was
all
in trailers outside. So when we had to literally move all of us out. So we spent a summer all upstairs and downstairs at Watts.
Will the addition will have windows as well, right?
Yeah.
Because
we've done shown on the soccer field.
You've just lots of windows.
Oh, that'd be nice. That's nice.
Lots of windows along there, which is a really nice view out on some trees and things for the kids. That's good.
And who uses the basement?
It's mostly hockey. The hockey teams, the men usually, or youth teams. Women. I'm sorry. So hockey teams use the basement.
The league's class.
Oh gosh, I never
want to
go down there.
Oh god, disgusting.
It looks really nice now.
It's very clean.
It's very,
very clean. Very
clean.
And
you repaint
it. It's when you get even just one hockey bag. When I was dating this weekend, and this guy came in with a hockey bag, and all of a sudden, everyone smelled it.
Did you just throw it in the middle of the floor and walk and walk off?
That's
why you find the fire pit, wasn't it?
With your toe, just move it.
It's a chimney.
All right. Any other questions?
I thought it was a really good presentation.
Thank you.
It gave a functional aspect to what you did, the design, which I really appreciate. So thank you.
Going over the top. So very nicely done. Thank you. We appreciate it. Yep. You can stay for the meeting if you want, or you can leave because it's going to be boring to me. No.
Okay, we're going to continue the discussion.
Actually, we're going on now to discussion on applying for a park grant because a lot of this stuff all folds into each other. So, please take one and pass it down. I think there's enough for all of you. I think we made enough.
This stuff that was not.
Yeah, this stuff, and Josh, you missed my whole explanation. We were moving on things really fast because we had the advisory meeting. We had to get all ready for the advisory meeting, and then we were waiting for the park grant information. So a lot of stuff did not get into the packet because we were moving on such a tight deadline. So my apologies. We don't like to do it this way, but we're not asking you to make any decisions tonight. We just want to get this information to you. Okay? So, as you know, we want the board to consider whether we want to apply for a park grant, and Dwight would help us and assist us with that park grant also. And so, the state of Illinois has issued are offering park grants for 2020. It doesn't happen very often. I don't know, it was a couple years since the last one happened, and then before that was 8 years before that. It's not, OSLAD seems to occur a little bit more than park grants. So the priority of park grant is renovation or construction of indoor recreation facilities that are not eligible for other IDNR grants. So that's why this particular project is very appealing for this particular application for this grant. So we have found out there's $25 million in funding. Originally they thought there may be 50, there's 25. So I'm going to tell you that. It's a 75 matching fund, so the most you can apply for is 2.5. They would pay 75, you'd pay 25 of that. The grant applications are due by January 21st. So like I said, we think this would be an ideal park grant because it meets a couple of needs. Expansion of our recreational programming space at Watts by going upstairs in the existing space. That includes our kids club program, obviously, but other general recreation programs, as Bobby explained. The closest to South School makes it the South School very enticing for a lot of our programs, especially right after school. Also, we have many ADA updates that have to be done in that building, which is attractive for a grant. We need a new roof. And we have improvements to the ice rink that we would have to, we need to do also. So, as you know, you approved the conceptual plan, which you saw today, and you also approved additional $8,500 if we need it, to help for White to help us write that grant for submission. So what we need is, after today's meeting, we would like to have a non-binding discussion, vote, kind of struggle, decide to see if you guys are interested in going that route, because we need some time to write the grant. And then you would officially approve it at the December 17th meeting. You can always change your mind on December 17th, but we just want to know if we should be starting to go down that path of writing this, because there's a lot of work to be done for this. The grant period is for 2 years, so once we get the grant and sign everything, that doesn't mean the day they award it, the day we sign all the binding contracts and stuff like that, we have 2 years to complete the project. So keep that in mind for that. So it's not something that will happen next year. There's only $25 million funds available. How much was that? How much is going to Chicago Park District? $5 million automatically goes to the Chicago Park District. And so that leaves $20 million. So it may be a long shot, but why not try for a long shot? What it costs us is there's a $300 application fee, and if we're approved, we're required to remit a grant award of $5,000. So those are remitted. So $300 is a risk for applying, and our time, I guess staff times, and the $8,500 to do the grant application.
Lisa, this $8,500 on the front, is that part of our existing contract?
Yes.
Okay.
You've already approved that, yeah.
Okay,
so that's the information about the park grant, okay? But we knew that in order for you to understand if you decide you want to go for the park grant, you need a little bit more information on some of the other things. So the remainder of this packet is explaining some of those other intangibles that we wanted to put before you so that you have a lot of the information, as much as we can give you. So I'm going to turn it over to Chris to talk about our CMAC grant, give you a little background on that, and then talk about timelines and things like that, because we thought that was important. Yeah.
So I'm going to give a brief synopsis of this memo here. I'm not going to read it line for line. As you know, the Park District received a grant from the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning for $667,000. For the trail project, in addition to a $200,000 grant from the IDNR. So the CMAC grant is a little different than IDNR in the fact that it's overseen by IDOT because it's federal money. So the fact that the Illinois Department of Transportation is involved means that there's a much higher degree of scrutiny over the project because it is federal money. So IDOT is really good at building roads and trails. Their function really isn't building playgrounds, interactive fountains, and trains. So the recommendation that we've gotten is to separate the Duke Park section of the project from the trail. So the trail will need, based on IDOT's expectations, the trail will need to be bid through the IDOT process, which is a much more detailed process. IDOT effectively controls the project. What that means is that the project would have to be bid out in June. We still think it would be completed in the same fiscal year. At the same time, IDOT effectively becomes the bank on the project. So the contractor submits the bills to IDOT. IDOT pays the contractor, and then IDOT comes back and bills the park district. So IDOT would pay the grant award out of $667,000 and then bill the park district for the remainder due, which, because our IDNR grant can be used to pay those what's due from IDOT. They're separate pools of money. So you'll see on the back page here the revised design and construction costs. So in addition, IDOT requires what's called an engineer in residence on the project. So that's effectively a professional engineer who will be on site for the entirety of the project, which adds additional cost to the project. So to receive the, yeah, so again, the challenge with IDOT is when federal money is involved, they have a lot of checks and balances in place to ensure that the money is expended in a
properly, very
upfront, transparent manner. Yeah. So effectively, the engineer in residence documents the daily progress of the project, provides reports to IDOT, and then they bill based on those reports. So to receive the $667,000, we're going to have to spend an additional $150,000. So the CMAP grant and the IDOT or the IDNR grant, effectively, they increase the cost of the project by about $150,000. But in the end, the net cost for the trail is only $642,000 versus the original $1.4 million with design fees. So it's still a significant benefit to go through the IDOT process. We've got some advice from a firm called Seabell that has a significant experience with IDOT. They've assisted us in providing us an IDOT cost assessment, because what we wanted to ensure was that by involving IDOT, we weren't going to double the price of the project. So we got a cost assessment of what IDOT projects are costing, and it was actually very close to the ballpark that Altima New gave us, so we were very comfortable with that as well. So are there any specific questions? I know this is a lot of information, and I've been compiling it for a long time, so... Mm-hmm.
So the $150,000 goes to that site engineer?
Typically, the site engineer will cost 10% of the mm-hmm. construction bid. And then the additional cost will be the cost that we will entail in separating the projects and bidding them separately through Altima New and through additional sub-consultants to work with IDOT at that point. So about $120,000 for Seabell, or for the engineer mm-hmm. in residence, and then an allowance of about $30,000 for other costs on the project, because it's of a much greater scope than we originally had entailed.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm confused by on the next page, because now the construction estimate for Duke Park seems way higher than I thought what we anticipated, unless I'm forgetting something.
So with Duke Park, we had the playground, the interactive fountain, and the train, and I believe based on the donation, we included port in place as well.
Yes, mm-hmm. correct.
So that is what increased the price of the project, was the port in place by another amount.
And then that other grant we got, aside from...
We have got a $200,000
for the trail.
For the trail, but we have applied for an OSLAG grant, but we have not received that. We'll know that in December, January timeframe.
Mm-hmm. But the $200,000 is aside from the $667,000, right?
Correct.
But that's
correct.
Not reflected in here?
It is.
It's up in the top, that $867,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we can't use any of that. Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, the only thing we can use towards the park is the donation of the $300,000.
Yes, correct.
Correct.
And hopefully, outside, but we won't know. Again, we won't know that.
Yeah, so fingers crossed.
It'd be helpful to see this in the big in our.
It's coming.
It's coming
in the packet.
Give us some time here. Any questions on this? Okay. Now we're going to move to Josh. Do you have a question?
I think it's related, but
do you want us to go through the whole packet, then you can come back to questions?
Well, I think we should ask questions when we have them.
Okay.
Let me just state what I'm thinking about, and you can tell me it's
okay.
In the packet if you want. I had a similar impression to what Stephanie had about the $875,000 for two firms, or $1 million for two firms. And I was, in my mind, I was like, okay, it's a playground, $350,000. I don't recall whether we approved or not. Maybe we did. Probably did, if you're talking about it now. The train and the water feature.
Mm-hmm. We did. We definitely did the water feature. The donation brought in the ported place and the train. Those were two. So we did the donation didn't go towards the playground. It went to those extra features that we were going to get for the playground. So that's what he made.
Down the $968,000.
Do you have that, Chris?
I do. I can probably rattle it off offhand. So we're about $275,300 for the playground, around two for the, and that's not including the board in place. Around two for the interactive fountain, which puts us around 500, another 150 or so for the train, 200, something like that, and then the remainder is the port in place. The port in place is about $100,000 to $150,000. So in this, that number of 875 does include a contingency. Mm-hmm. So okay. the 93,000 in design costs also includes the design of the unfunded elements, which is the Veterans Park design and the trail pod designs as well. So that's why that fee is a little bit greater than the 10% we normally spend.
Okay. And notwithstanding my senior moment, Lisa, you were saying we did approve these things in a previous meeting.
It just didn't speak.
It was actually back in
so
March.
It was actually back in March.
I understand it was actually doing the Veterans Park and the other design, doing it now as opposed to later.
Design advantage in construction or in design?
Design.
Just in design.
The advantage is we are going to have a fixed cost on what, because it will be taken out to bid. And then if a donation becomes available or additional funds, the board could choose to fund that if they so desired. We've already signed the contract to design it and approved that at the board level.
Yeah, the board approved that because they wanted to have that design in case a donation came forward for them.
And hopefully that's in the future for us.
This is fantastic. All right.
Okay. Next, we have a.
I want to get that in writing.
So next, we have a set.
Thank you. This is the Dudley question.
Okay. So Dudley had the question. So we develop a timeline, and believe me, it's kind of there's gray area. So do not hold us to this because.
Don't gray on this.
I designed it.
I'm just like, make it black and white. No, because we never know when things get awarded from the state and how long things will take. So this is our best guess estimate. The only thing I know for sure is in October, Chris and I went to the state of Illinois to make a presentation.
That's a fixed point.
That's a fixed point for $400,000. So that happened in October. In January, we're hoping that the OSLI grant recipient center now, there's rumors it might be before Christmas, but we think it'll be January before the conference usually. Duke, the first installment of Duke Park donation is coming in that month. Remember, it's every year for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then our application is due for park grant if we choose to do that. January through May, if awarded the OSI grant, $200,000 received up front from the state to start the design on that. In February, we'll go to bid for Duke Park with estimate plus or negative for $875,000. Duke Park construction begins April, May. Mm-hmm. June, Connect Glencoe goes to bid for $1.2 million, plus or minus. And then in September, Connect Glencoe construction begins. And as Chris indicated, IDOT pays invoice and bills us for the match and anything over the grant amount. So if it will be more, so we'll pay that point in time. And we also paid payments were due for residents resident engineer for the trail and Altamanu. And then we do not have any idea when the park grant will be announced. Mm-hmm. The reason I say that is that there's one just announced from, like, well, they announced the winners, but they didn't get the money. It was a 2014 one that just got received money. So just to give you kind of a...
It was a whole political thing
got held up. So we don't think that's going to happen here in this administration, just so you know, because we don't. So that's kind of the timeline we're dealing with. Quick question, please.
I may have missed this. IDOT pays out their money first and then they start billing you, or is it vice versa?
Based on the agreement, pay IDOT $183,000. It's a 25-75 or 20-80 match.
Okay, so you pay that right in the beginning.
They'll bill us they'll bill us when they bill us. I know that's not the answer.
I got it.
But it's IDOT does things. They march to the beat of their own drum, and they've been very forthcoming and helpful. But the first step is real. Keller and I are attending a meeting with them to really iron all these things out here in the next month.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. So, any question? Other questions on timeline? Now we turn it over to Carol.
Yeah, so, to your question, Stephanie, about seeing it laid out in our format. So we've now taken all our givens, and there's still some question marks here. These projected numbers, 1920, are looking pretty good at this point, where we'll take about 1.25 million into the next fiscal year. Okay, so we've got the two transfers coming in from corporate and rec, 1.5 million. We've got the donation we're going to receive, actually, first year is in 1920, then the following 2 years, appropriately on January 1. Sale of London House. Actually, this is not the most recent one.
It must have been that. I thought I had the most recent. We changed that to 475 based on the Zillow market estimate. So it's just an estimate.
457.
456. Oh, I'm sorry. 456. Yep. You never know. So
we checked
Zillow.
It's in green because it's not, obviously, it's not a known yet. The grants, we did get the two grants for... Yeah, this is not the right one.
You want to get the right one? Because I thought I had the right one.
That's all right. So the Illinois Trail is the IDNR grant and the CMAP. Those total $867,150. Okay? And that is pretty much given money that's going to come in next year.
The right one.
Then we also have a separate line for Grant OSLAD, which is still an open green because that's not known yet. The bonds, I'll come back to that in a second. That's actually a big question mark with the orange. But then these amounts are all pretty much what are going to be budgeted for fiscal year 2021. So at the end of the year, you'll note down below the ADA improvements. We budgeted $100,000, and what we've determined is a lot of the projects that we're doing, there's an ADA component that's part of the ADA plan. So that we've only spent about $3,000, and we feel like those monies could be more appropriately come out of the special rec fund. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I've taken those out of Fund 69 total, and you won't see those.
Okay.
So at the end of fiscal year 2021, with no bond proceeds yet in the equation, we have just a little over $1.3 million. So with the new sheet that Lisa's making, it's almost 1.5, okay? Now, the thing to remember about the park grant is money is not received up front. It's received upon completion of the project, okay? So, and did we say we were saying an amount?
We'll get there.
So, because I can't finish my discussion. So I just realized I can't really say in a continuation of my discussion because we haven't given out the end amount yet.
No, you're right.
So, do we want to jump there first?
Just go right there. Go ahead, Chris.
Chris, you got that?
Okay, obviously, having to not replace our compressors and cooling floor is a really good thing for us. So to maintain the current level of service, which we know based on the assessment is the dasher boards, our compressor control system, LED lighting, the sloped roof, few various HVAC replacements, fire alarm, and a couple of IDOL compliance safety issues, and the water main, puts us right around $1 million. So that's not necessarily a fund that would all have to be expended in 1 year, but it needs to be expended to maintain the community service for the long term. So the match for the park grant for the 2.5 ask is $833,000. So what we need to do to maintain the current level of service exceeds the amount that we would be asked to match for the park grant. So in it now, the next level is the renovation or the indoor space. So that includes the additional programming space of upstairs, the ADA upgrades, the improved entrances, the elevator, restroom improvements, improved flow, and an actual fire suppression system. White has given us an estimate of between 2.5 and 2.0 million on that.
2.8, excuse me.
So that puts us right around a $3.5 to $3.8 million project. So you can see if we were to receive the park grant, the full max amount, which would be 2.5 million, the net cost of the district to do the project would be between $1 and $1.3 million. So that's not including the parking, the additional parking upgrades, or an additional off-season amenities, which we discussed earlier. So again, the matching component for the park district would be $833,000, which based on White's assessment, what we would need to spend to maintain the current level of service exceeds that number at this point.
If I read this correctly, you're burying the lead here, Chris, is that we're going to spend $1 million
anyway. Correct.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, you are right about that.
We were hoping you'd come to that conclusion.
Yeah.
And new amenities, additional phases could be eligible for potential grants in the future.
Outside grants in the future.
Oh, I like that.
Or donation,
okay,
too.
Or donation.
Or donation.
Because, you know. Yeah.
People love their house.
Yes,
correct.
Sure.
So potentially you're getting the renovated indoor space for $300,000.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So now that the cost is out there.
Yeah.
The cat's
okay.
out of the bag.
Okay.
3.8 million. So, but we have to. Come
She's
up
our
with
finance person. She has to go doom and gloom.
Yeah.
This is your job.
We have to come up with the cash flow.
Yeah.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
There is potential, and we don't know yet because we haven't gone through the potential to receive half of it 50% through, but I think we need to kind of go into it. We need to pay for it, and then we, upon completion, we get the grant, the 2.5 reimbursed back to us.
Right.
So we've been talking about.
We need to issue bonds?
Well, we've been talking about issuing bonds, and I think given that discussion, we were going to start it in February, but now with this grant opportunity, and just as Josh says, we're going to have to spend $1 million anyways to get a $2.5 million potential benefit. Mm-hmm. There is even more to issuance of the bonds now versus later. The only thing question mark I have is that if we don't find out about the park grant for a while, when we issue the bonds, we basically have 3 years to spend down 85% of the bond proceeds. Okay. We have to spend 85% of that.
But it doesn't.
But it doesn't.
Pre-designated as to what we spend.
Exactly. Which
has to be our funds.
Oh, so remember that because there are the other projects that
are on the backside of this.
Many other projects.
Wait, what?
On the backside of this.
These are the projects that have been floating out there in future years that we said we were going to wait on the Watts and the maintenance facility, which right now is listed at $3 million in there. So when you're looking at $9 million and the issuance of $4.2 million, which has not changed really since the last discussion in September, we could issue $4.2 million with approximate impact to the taxpayers of less than $40 on an $800,000 house. Okay? So I want to just finish this sheet first, and then we'll get into more of the bond discussion. So
$1 million is more than what their tax bill is currently.
Currently, right. Because the 130, the current level for the Watts debt that's going to come off, we're levying $130,000 for that principal an interest payment every year.
Yeah.
At the 4.2 million, that's going to go up to what our debt service extension max is right now, and that's like 273. So the difference in the 130 and the 273 creates the tax increase to the average taxpayer. Okay?
We wouldn't have to go that far, though.
No, but when you're looking at these projects and a $2.5 million potential to receive a grant at interest rates at 2 to 2.5% versus the 6 to 6.5% that we did it 20 years ago for the original lots renovation, I think it would be prudent to issue the full amount for the impact to the taxpayer. Given all of these projects, and again, we haven't really gotten the maintenance facility yet, but that in itself, we talked about the issuance of bonds for something that is not going to be referendum item by any means. Nobody's going to vote to approve
that. No one's going to vote to approve that.
You, the Watts debt, it's going to be retiree issued.
2001.
I'd go back and figure out, adjusted for inflation, what the difference is, because you're saying it's an increase of $38.
Right.
Right. But really, if you adjust the, if, assuming it's been a level impact on the taxpayer for 20 years.
Right.
It to me, it's like, it's the same thing.
Right, exactly.
You're true. You're exactly right.
What we also need to remember, we have not issued debt. We've taken from fund balance reserves.
Yes, right.
So we haven't issued the debt and did approximately $5 to $6 million in projects the last 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
I will be hard-pressed to find other agencies that have been able to do that without issuing debt. So we've saved money to the taxpayer. By not issuing debt,
and improving our facilities, improving our parks, improving our services with no impact to them. So
it'll be easier to sell the tax, the issuance, if it's for a renovation of Watts than if it's for a Christmas.
Exactly. Absolutely. And where we have the potential to get $2.5 million back.
I know, that would be.
So really, what we're talking is. It could pay for the maintenance center by issuing that park grant.
Yeah.
But if you're not willing to do the full amount, I say you cannot do the park grant unless you're willing to levy that full amount.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can you remind me about, do we have no debt on take-up?
We do, but it's referendum debt, and it goes for 10 years. So we're locked in to pay until 2026 on that. I'm sorry, we were locked in 2015 when we refunded that. So we have another 5 to 6 years on that.
And that's
about $1 million.
Okay.
So there's also going to be debt that's going to come off at that time. And I know for discussion at the board about maybe doing something with Lakefront at that particular time might be a more of a referendum item.
Right.
Uh-huh. And if you look at this list, there's quite a bit on there related to Lakefront Park.
Lakefront,
But that won't fall off for a good 5 to 6 years.
Right.
And that by law, you can't issue, you have a legal debt margin. So it's based on your assessed valuation, which is a little over $900 billion right now. It basically means that we can issue just a little over $5 million in non-referendum debt. So we're under that legal limit. Again, the rates are low.
And if you wait, say you wait till it drops off, say you wait near you'll be hard pressed to get 2.5%.
Yeah.
You know.
And again, we have an opportunity with the park grant. I think that's what kind of makes it a slam dunk for me, is that we've got to spend the million anyways. Mm-hmm. We could have a potential to get 2.5 million. Mm-hmm. And we have a whole list of projects that
we don't have funding for.
That we don't have funding for right now. and there are things that you guys don't want to, you know, it's like, are you okay with getting rid of Milton Park or not replacing Friends Playground, Port in Place, or not doing the Lakefront Tennis Court? Maybe you're okay with that one.
Just very quickly, so, the 300,000-watt board replacement actually is the Dasher boards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's in there.
That one's in there, but we put it in there because
I was
know.
Like, how's it a million without those boards?
No, the boards are in there.
The boards are in there.
Okay.
And I just want to point out, too, these numbers in orange moving across, those are the transfers coming from corporate and rec.
Yeah.
As Bobby will speak to later on in the meeting on certain things. those numbers are going to get less and less guaranteed.
We're getting the days of us transferring what
$800,000
a year are long gone with the minimum wage and with insurance going up. So we won't have that money to do these projects. Like, you know, we've been very lucky we've been able to do that in the past.
Right.
I guarantee things are out of our control. With the way minimum wage is going up, we can't raise fees fast enough to cover those. So those days are long gone. I think she's being very generous in putting those numbers in for the next 5 years, because I'd be surprised if we could transfer $200,000 in 5 years from now.
Wow. Well, that's insurance and minimum wage. That's
Exactly. That's it. And other, and we'll talk to that. You'll see that in our next presentation. But so really, we have a lot of so basically all this information. What we need to know is if you have any other questions, and if you think you're ready to say yes, we want to go for a park grant.
I don't think it makes sense not to. I mean, if we have a shot, we have minimal to lose. You know, it just doesn't make sense. And if we don't get the grant, then we're gonna have to really talk about what we're doing with it. But until that point, we might as well try for it.
Yeah.
I agree with her. I think we should also try and get donations for Watts, because it seems like something people would give money to.
I didn't mention that part. As far as advisory committee, we actually said anybody who's interested in being on a fundraising committee for that to contact Bobby, and I believe he has quite a few
somebody
people.
Somebody wants to spearhead it.
So that is a possibility, but that's not millions of dollars.
No.
That's just, you know, maybe we'll get
process.
That. Yeah. So we just want to make, but we're going to try, but you know.
Not millions of dollars, but
one thing we have to
positive.
One thing you have to be, one thing you have to be willing to do is give naming rights to the facility, and that's definitely a possibility that would be a larger donation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's move ahead and go for the grant.
What I say doesn't matter. Because
we'd like to know.
Yes, I concur with my colleagues. Here.
Okay. When I ask that question, I also say, are you then committed to doing the refunding of the bonds?
That's hand in hand.
I think
it's
so.
It's not a refunding, it's a new issue.
I'm sorry, a new issue. Thank you for application, a new issue of a bond, because those two need to go hand in hand. If you say, no, I don't want to do that, we really can't go for the park grant because we have too much going on. So,
I said from the beginning, I would say way more comfortable here before the election. So,
I agree.
I think I said before I even knew about Watts that we should be doing that.
Yeah, lickety split. Lickety split,
Yeah.
We do need to time it till after closing, until after February, so it goes on the following year's tax levy.
Right.
So I'll work that all out with Eric and kind of get a more definite timeline now and can bring that to the December meeting as well.
Right, more specific numbers and all the rest of that. Yes, okay.
Very good. Thank you. I know it's a lot of information, and I bet you think we're done, but we're not. Because next on our agenda is that we really wanted to talk about, let me get my agenda here, facility operation discussion. In particular, the facility operation discussion we talk about is really the beach and Watts and some trends that we are looking at. And we don't expect you to have we just want to give you this information to start thinking. We know we gave you a lot of information, but this is what we are thinking about right now in budget season. We're forecasting out what's going to happen down the line in our programs. And so these are things that we're starting to think about, what can we do about this? So I'm going to toss it over to Bobby.
Yeah, as Lisa said, and as we were talking about earlier, a minimum wage is coming like a train starting in January. Facility pricing, concessions, service levels all have an impact on the finances of the district, obviously, as we've already talked about. We just talked about it. $15 is coming in 2025. So starting January 2020, it's going up to $9.25, and then in July it's going to go to $10. It's going to be a pretty significant increase, a dollar a year after that, which is going to have an impact on the district's operational costs, will also impact FICA, so Social Security, Medicare tax will also be impacted if we've got big increases in labor costs.
Do we have to include those for part-time as well?
So we do pay them. They don't come necessarily out of the operating budget for those facilities, though. They're a separate funds.
Oh,
so big picture, the district does pay for it. It just doesn't necessarily come out of those funds. So we have to bear that in mind when we're thinking about it. So what I've done here is I have basically put out what minimum wage is going to be over from 2016 through 2025, and I've mapped lifeguards. It's a pretty standard job, seasonal job at the Park District. It is above what some of our base pays are, so our base pay might be for like beach services or cashiers who tend to follow minimum wage. They are above it, and they track minimum wage. So you can see there's a pretty significant increase coming in the coming years. So in 2020, we're going to have minimum wage at $10 for the summer. Lifeguards will be at $11.75, believe it or not. Deerfield's at $12 this coming summer. So we are in line with other districts. They actually went up from the mid-8s to 12 in 1 year.
They jumped up that high.
Yeah.
They couldn't get
staff. Highland Park's doing the same thing, and you know, we're all following suit.
So
you have to compete with Chicago.
Yeah,
we have to compete with McDonald's or Portillo's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're all paying that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they immediately went up to 15. So, you know.
Yeah.
So
it's
scary.
I understand. It's
scary.
We feel the same thing. Yeah.
So how does it actually impact? So what I did was I did an analysis of what the seasonal staffing costs are at the beach alone. So this is the Boating Beach and the Spring Beach combined. You'll notice from 2016 to 2019, we actually saw the operational costs for seasonal staff decrease. Some of that's due to the weather for the last couple of years, but also we've been taking a good look ever since myself and Matt came on board of, do we really need to be doing this? Can we do things cheaper? We also lost some staff, that was higher paid, brought new staff in. But the reality is, when you take what we spent on seasonal staff for 2019 and you use the compounding factor of what we're increasing wages for next year and you build that in to what we spent this year, the impact cumulatively in 6 years is about $216,000, and that's just in seasonal, because that's what's going to impact first. We already have full-time staff or year-round staff that are not going to be immediately impacted by minimum wage, but we're going to get that push at some point in the future.
Yeah,
this is also going to impact camps, but camps pricing is a little more fluid. You're able to, everybody's going to have that issue. The beach is a little more tricky, as we'll talk about. So this is significant. When you back out for inflation, as Josh was talking about earlier, it's not 216, it's about 143,000 when you take inflation out of it. So what are our options? There's four. Three are realistic. Absorbing the cost isn't realistic long-term for the district, so really we have to look at, and we are looking at, our levels of service, adjusting our pricing, and then a combination of both of those. And the reality is a combination of both of those is realistic. So when we look at our pricing, there's a lot of things we have to think about. Each facility is different. When you look at the boathouse, we have reduced capacity, so we have less sand spots due to erosion, high water. We have high demand, we have wait lists for some of those sand spots. We are at the top of the market compared to other people around here. We're pretty up there. We have OSLAD restrictions based on grants we received. And then our lake rentals, which generate revenue for the boathouse, are very much weather dependent, and the last couple of years have suffered because of that. Watts, very weather dependent. It's not how much ice you book, it's how much you cancel. It's high demand for private ice time. Private ice rates are at the lower end of the market when you look at other rinks around here. There's also a limited supply of rentable ice at Watts because we're restricted by what time we can stay open till and what time we can open at. And then public skate, very important to this community, but not a large generator of revenue. When you look at the beach house, again, weather dependent, OSLAD restrictions, price sensitive. Just because you raise price to 10% doesn't mean revenue is going to grow 10%. We're near the top of the market when you look at other beaches around here, and we're also trying to encourage pass sales, so we have actually been reducing those prices. What have we done over the last 5 years? On the beach house side, resident rates have actually gone up 17% from $6 to $7. Non-residents has gone up 40% over the last 5 years. On the passes, resident passes have gone down 3%. Non-residents has gone up 4%. At Watts, there's been no increase in the daily skate fee in the last five seasons. Ice rentals has only gone up 12% for residents and non-residents. It is worth noting, though, that the group renters has gone up significantly in the last 5 years. It was significantly below that at 253 and 278. It was at 220 when I started. Now it's up closer to that at 280. The boat size resident rates in the last 5 years has gone up 16%. Non-resident rates has gone up 41%. In terms of levels of service, we did an analysis looking at where our areas we can look to potentially make some savings without a massive impact. We're not suggesting that we're going to do this, or we're not looking for an answer on this, but feedback on what our thought process is here will be helpful. On the beach side, we were looking at New Trier doesn't finish school until the 11th of June. We've struggled for the last number of years to find staff for those first two opening weeks, the full weeks, Monday through Fridays. Weekends hasn't been too much of a problem. We were looking about delaying opening during the week until the regular season. So we'd actually be closed 10 more days in June when the weather traditionally has not been great, where staffing is difficult. How does it impact us financially? We'd save about $7,000 in wages. And potentially lose about $4,000 in revenue. That revenue has come from the average from the last 3 years. So we actually would lose money by being open them. There is things to consider. Pass sales, which traditionally people would say, oh, the pass isn't as valuable anymore. They might buy passes during those times, but the facility would potentially be available for people to use it, but the water is cold at that time. During the regular season, if we were to close at 7 p.m. instead of 8 p.m., we would save around $4,500, and we don't think there will be any impact to revenue because the majority of the transactions, less than 1% of transactions, is after 7 o'clock at night. Right. At Watts, if we were to look at, say, not opening until 2:30 on Mondays through Thursdays, we would save direct costs of about $2,500. There would be significant indirect, intangible costs there too. One example would be the parks team every day goes and they prep the ice. They do the facility cleanup. That takes them away from other jobs at the district, so they wouldn't have to do that. We could potentially rely on cheaper rink staff who are seasonal to come in slightly early to prep Watts. So that's something we would not even consider looking at changing the weekend, because that's when the majority of the revenue comes in for the facility and the usage. On the boathouse side, we would talk about reducing the hours on the weekends, plus also not going to full weekdays in the preseason. That will save about $2,000 on wages, similar to what we did at the beach house. During the regular season, if we closed 2 hours early on the weekdays, so instead of at 8, we closed at 6, and on the weekends, we closed at 7 instead of 8, we'd save about $7,000. In the postseason, if we were to lower the number of hours as well, close an hour earlier, we'd save about $2,000. That's in today's prices. Imagine with minimum wage increasing the way it's going to, those savings will also grow exponentially with the cost of minimum wage. There are just some areas that we could look to cut services if we have to.
But overall, these aren't really big dollars.
They're not. So, but you know, every
penny helps.
Rolling that up to big things.
Yeah, exactly.
Other beaches. So Chicago, actually a number of years ago, moved to a shorter day. They go from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. We currently are 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. during a regular season. Wilmette goes from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. or as daylight permits. Places like Lake Bluff are actually closed during the weekdays, and then they've got limited hours on weekends. They go 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. So we're towards the more generous hours spectrum. This chart you'll have seen before, we talked about it at the Lakefront presentation. It's 2018's busiest times versus 2019's. What you will notice is there's pretty much no transactions happening after 6 o'clock at night. The majority of transactions are happening between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. Really, it's between 10 and 3 is when the majority are happening. So also for your reference, just the daily attendance figures for 2019 versus 2018. Weekends, as we know, are traditionally busier. Last year with the weather, there was a significant drop in weekends, but that's 1 year out of the last 7 or 8 years. Concessions, an update. So concessions is another piece of the puzzle. We just went out to RFP for a 2-year contract for a vendor to run the concessions for us. if we do find a vendor, which is not a high probability, but not a very low probability, there's 50-50 probably, we'd expect the same level of service, and we would expect to probably break even from it. We do generate revenue, but there are costs that don't directly go towards that operational expense, like electricity and water and staff costs dealing with it. We may have to look at moving in-house. Highland Park is moving their concessions in-house. A lot of districts aren't finding vendors bidding on concessions. If we do that, there's going to be a large operating expense. There could also be a large capital expense, as we'd have to invest to put in what we would potentially need to sell, and we would be likely committing the district to 3 years of running it in-house. Other options we're looking at, we're trying to think outside the box. What else can we do to minimize expenses? We're looking at vending machines. We're looking at food trucks potentially in busy days. We're looking at some kind of food carts. We're looking at potentially something like a DoorDash. We're really trying to think outside the box, because at the end of the day, concessions doesn't generate anything that contributes to indirect costs. In fact, they're going to cost money. And if we run it in-house, the board has to be okay with subsidizing concessions pretty significantly. Our hope is we're going to get somebody to come in, but we have to plan as if they're not going to. So we'll know in the next 2 weeks, but we have to prepare. Again, it's going to be something that the district will be subsidizing. The financial concerns, does the board have any concerns with some of the items we talked about here, some of the strategies we might be considering, things to avoid? We are going to be having a Lakefront advisory meeting next Tuesday, and my plan is to present, very similar to what I presented tonight, to lay out the reality of what we're looking at with minimum wage and what our facilities are going to run into in the next couple of years.
I had a couple of observations. Mm-hmm. If you maybe go back to the slide where you talked about the increases in the fees, some of them seemed quite significant, and others, I'm sorry, not that one, the one where you're talking about the change.
This one here?
Fees. Yeah, mm-hmm. Some of them seem quite significant, but then others, frankly, consider that that's a change over 4 years. Mm-hmm. You know, the family pass, just to pick on one, the lower left corner, mm-hmm. A 4% increase or a 3% decrease over 4 years is a
correct.
Seems like there's a lot of opportunity there.
There is. Just bear in mind the elasticity of demand with that. We've seen with passes. Passes have been on the complete decline. From a financial point of view, passes pay for themselves. The more passes the district sells, the better, because people, you know, it doesn't matter
right.
how many times they go.
Right.
So we've actually lowered it in line with Winnetka, mm-hmm. and also to encourage okay. usage.
Well, the other example, though, is the public skate, 0% change over 4 years.
Correct. And we are still in line with all the other rinks. So we are looking at it. You know, mm-hmm. from my point of view, ice rentals, we are on the cheaper side of ice rentals.
Yeah. I like that. The analysis that you did right before this, so mm-hmm. kind of where we were. Mm-hmm. It seems like there's some opportunities there.
Yeah, we really look at what others are paying around us. So if every ice rink around us is doing 8, we really cannot raise it to 10, because we'll just lose them to those other rinks.
That may be, but I suspect they're looking at the minimum wage.
Right.
Yeah, well, exactly. And we'll keep in contact with them all the time, and when they raise, then we'll raise too, because, you know, we'll stay competitive. But
it's also worth noting that the public skate, like I said, it's not a huge generator revenue. We get a lot of people through the door, but we only do about $13,000 worth of revenue in public skate every year, mm-hmm. while private rentals, which are, you know, the 9 o'clock rentals, or we do about $100,000. So a 10% increase in ice rentals,
yeah.
is going to be effectively the same as 100% increase in public
okay.
skate.
Mm-hmm. Then you also say the ice rentals are cheaper?
The ice rentals, they are cheaper. We're on the,
yeah.
we are at the low end. There's, mm-hmm. they could range from, I would say, $275 up to close to $500 for certain rinks per hour.
But wow. you're also looking at covered, impact indoor rinks.
Correct.
Not
correct. So it's not apples to apples,
yeah.
but.
And size of the rinks.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's
so
going to want to rent.
I just thought that analysis of how we compared with others, as well as how we've changed over time, was instructive and seems like you're doing the right thinking about it.
Okay.
Since you asked, you know, for questions and comments, my other comment is, it concerns me. I don't know if we have a choice, but cutting staff at the beach and boating, particularly when there's potential to be a lot of people there, just scares me that somebody's going to drown on June 3rd, 3 days after they finish in the career.
Correct.
That maybe would have been avoidable if we had staff there.
Correct. But we also have in the fall, you know, that's a chance to be a very busy time with not lifeguards on duty.
It scared the hell out of me in the fall.
But we just can't get people. And in fact, that's the problem in early June, too.
I heard from a neighboring park district, they had their busiest day of the year after their beach was closed.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't recall which one it was. It was one close by. But
it's a hard one because pools, they close their doors. No one can go in, right?
Yeah, yeah.
After we're a park.
Right.
Really, and they go down there, and any time we're at risk, we close the doors. When we walk away at 8 o'clock, we're at risk then, because kids are down there.
Could you go to the times, my comments, the beach times? Yeah. So my thought, actually there was one where that shows all the neighboring communities what time they open and close their beach. So my thought is, you know, our true competitors or our true neighbors, Winnetka, Kenilworth, Wilmette, they're all opening at 9. I would not want to see us open later than 10, but I definitely can see us. I've been there in the evening because when I swim, I like to go in the evening. Mm-hmm. And I think we could certainly let the staff go earlier than they are right now. So I think we could save a little on that back end.
I completely agree. And I also wouldn't want us to open any later.
No.
And I almost would want us to open earlier because we lose all the money from admissions.
We walk around.
They do a great job.
Pride for us.
Okay. Anybody goes down at 9, if they have to pay or leave.
But some people do go from 7 to 9, and then leave us.
And you know what? Honestly, if it's just you can't really afford to, I'm okay with that.
For those five people that do that,
I mean, you know.
As far as our season,
it's like the Mad Day.
As far as the, family pass, I've said this before and I still feel the same way, that, you know, you've heard the complaints, you know that people already don't like that they have to pay at all for the beach, and they still compare us to Highland Park. So, and I still think that if we made it lower, we'd sell more, and we would still get the less use, and we would make more money.
I don't disagree with that.
On passes.
Yeah. Residents passes.
No, you know that you have only. No, you have to change the. We have to have that.
It's a 50% already, or are we
100?
No,
are we? It's. You basically would have to half that, say 230, so 115. 15 based off the non-resident right now is what we could go down to.
Yeah.
Now don't forget, we did incentivize this year with the all the pass holders got free paddle boarding when they won free paddle boarding for each person. Not a lot of utilization with some people.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really money and ease of registration and doing something really out of the box to get a lot of people, because you get that money. It's just like the conception of going to the monthly rate of collecting for the fitness centers, people won't cancel. I kind of think it's the same thing.
Well, the rec team has started to look at, is there ways of like automatic, like Watts closed March 1, offering the same year same year pricing for next year if you sign up between March 1 and March 7. We're looking at ideas, how do we implement that?
Yeah.
What if we did an all access pass where you pay $5 a month, and you get access to the beach, Watts, and the fitness center, right?
We are absolutely
maybe
looking at all
those.
We have started to look at things like that. We'll have to look at our technology. We're going to have to look at our registration software. We're going to have to look at how we implement all that pricing. So it's a little, it's complicated. So it's a big picture look at all of this right now to see where we can make initial big gains.
The resident, non-resident, we do have some, I call it, restrictions on that, too, don't we?
Yes,
anything with the beach, with the outside ground, with the sea,
That's One and a half times?
It can't be more than twice.
Twice.
More, twice. Okay.
So that's what we were saying, the 140-229. Okay. Go down to 115.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Max that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go to the slide. Oh, God. Either the slide before or after. No.
This one?
No. Wait, go back. That.
This one?
Yeah. No.
This one?
No.
That's
just no, no, no. Sorry.
I think it's at the end.
It's the end. Okay. Yeah, the other direction. Yeah.
This one?
That one. Sorry. Yeah.
What time is lights open now?
11 o'clock.
How many people use it from?
Anywhere from 3 to 5 people on average a day in the time period.
Oh.
Would that affect the school classes if you don't have
We would stay open for those that. Type of activities. No ice rink in the state of Illinois does good between the hours of 9 a.m. and 3 p.m.
No.
every day.
No.
There's no people who people work. The kids play at school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then on things like winter break, we would do full hours of winter break because that's when kids are off. They want to go to the rink.
Days off school.
Yeah.
Stuff like that would be open, but
And Josh, you might even be able to help me with this, but in the boathouse, the post-season, I've always thought it seemed weird that we stayed open so long and how expensive that must be, but what are your thoughts about the late season, like the after late August, that it's open
the boaters are a lot hardier than the swimmers.
Yeah.
And a lot of us have wetsuits and some of us have dry suits, and so,
is it active during those
probably can
weeks?
Speak to it, but I would say it depends on the weather and certainly on the weekends. You know, not so much during the week.
Yeah, not during the week. It's very quiet during the week. Although you get
no, but if it's 72
open?
Degrees on
yeah.
September 22nd,
well,
there's gonna
yeah.
be a bunch of people there.
Friday afternoons,
yep.
Saturdays and Sundays in the fall are when the boathouse is traditionally the busiest.
But we staff it every day.
Not in fall, just Fridays,
okay.
Saturdays, and Sundays.
Okay, that's
all
we staff
at. Noon to 6. But traditionally, we close once people leave. So
okay.
These are all based on using the hours that we're set to.
Okay.
We do a good job of closing when there's nobody there.
Okay, got it.
The boaters are traditionally less willing to go out in the spring because the water's cold. What tends to happen is they come down and set their boats up. We open May 9th to help get the boat set up, because if we open any later, staff is training in the pool the next week, and then the next week the beach has opened, so we'd have boaters trying to bring their boats down the same weekend that the beach is opening up. Really, that's the best time to open up, but we have very minimal hours actually in the spring, because the weather's good is not good, we close. There isn't a lot of meat on the bone, really.
Yeah, got it.
Unfortunately.
Got it.
The big savings would be during the week.
Mm-hmm.
During the week is when you get less boaters going. I think we, you know, the reality is we'll have to say to people is are less available time to go out, or price is more important. And that's the eventual conversation we're going to have, because price is going to have to go up significantly to maintain the current deficit that we have at those facilities.
Yeah, right.
We should ask at the Lakefront Advisory.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very valid, like, again, there's three realistic options. And maybe it's a combination, you know, if people aren't using the boathouse before 3 o'clock, maybe we don't open till 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we do have a sailing and aquatics camp, but that staff is doing something. They're not coming out of that budget. They're doing something.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
So the bathrooms are available.
The bathrooms are available. There's just no, you know, somebody watching. But don't forget, like, those are the staff that are helping with kayak and paddleboard rentals.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be less kayak and paddleboards available to the community, because we're not going to just push them out there with nobody watching.
Mm-hmm.
So there's good and bad with everything.
And certainly, I know that boating isn't the most popular sport in the world, but I took a lot of comfort knowing that my kids could be there and somebody was watching them in what otherwise is a pretty big lake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think with the amount of sand spots that have been eroded, the potential revenue has dropped.
Yep. Wow.
Like tens of thousands.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a shame.
Yeah.
But a reality.
So the preseason, you're saying that goes with the school calendar. So the school calendar goes to the 12th.
Mm-hmm. Dutra goes till the 11th. I think the school is the 12th.
And that makes sense.
Yeah.
And a lot of the pools don't open full time until I think I don't know like the 6th or after.
Till school, really, when school is.
Yeah.
There's some pools that don't even open Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we had a $30,000 weekend 2 years ago, so.
Yeah,
you got to roll the dice, and sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
You can close for 4 rainouts, and then you get yourself out. Yeah.
We don't, but we don't have a pool where we're chlorinating it and heating it, mm-hmm. so that's why they don't open. We have a little more flexibility, you know, if it's raining, we send the staff home. Mm-hmm. We don't have that kind of upkeep. That.
Okay, any other questions?
It's just surprising that you only save $2,500 at Watts. Those hours, but is that
one,
just
person.
One person.
But again, the intangibles are there,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
The person.
Yes, right.
They had to come in early
right.
to get and work overtime to get it.
Yeah.
The rink ready for the day that early if it's snowing. Mm-hmm. They have to get here even earlier to get the lots clean, then get over to us to get it open in time. So
that does seem ridiculous for three.
Yeah.
Okay.
3 to 5 years. Yeah.
So there's $25,000 worth of savings there.
Yeah.
So.
That's today's prices, right.
So, yeah. What do we say that, you know, the $25,000 out of $110,000 operating for seasonal, you're talking 25% of the budget.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, wow.
So,
but that was just the beach.
Yeah.
Correct. So there's $2,500 for what? So,
yeah.
20-something percent potentially you could look at there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In 2025, that's almost $35,000.
I know I said it before, but don't forget that everybody else has got the same cost problem. So
we are. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what we all do. Some park districts may elect to subsidize it more. You know, we don't know.
Mm-hmm. At least we know going into the next 4 or 5 years
we do.
What we're heading into.
Yep. Yeah.
But big picture is things are going to change for the next year,
yep.
no matter what.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Well, that.
So we're going to bring it to Lake Frontier.
Okay. All right.
Limited.
No.
All right.
Okay. I really appreciate you putting a larger frame around this, though, because we need to be thinking about
yes,
we
both
do.
Short term and long term.
Right? Yes, we do. All right.
Okay, Lisa. Is there any other additional items before we?
No, we are going to the dog park task force will be presenting their findings at the next committee meeting, which will be Tuesday, January 7th, I believe. So that's slated for that meeting.
Okay, so the board enter into closed session where no action will be taken. I entertain a motion that pursuant to Section 5, ILCS 120/2 of the Open Meetings Act, the board will enter closed session to discuss leasing property as mandated by Section 2.06, (5) ILCS 120/2, (BC), (5), (5). Those present during executive session include Commissioners and Executive Director Lisa Shepherd.
So moved.
So moved. Second.
Okay. So moved was who? Wait, hold on.
Yep.
So moved.
Yep. Dudley and then Josh.
And then Dudley.
Josh,
yep. Josh second.
Things are going to change over the next year.
8:49.
Okay. Do we have to make a motion again?
Yep.
Okay. So.
Wait. What time is it?
So I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Well, before we adjourn, I just want to say kind of a thing on next door. There was an article today about the cottage.
Yes, I was going to tell you that. Oh. Is that it did go in the Tribune today, yeah. saying our name, and I called up the village. And I said, "What happened?" He goes, "Well, they wouldn't accept that. We had no comment." I'm like, "Oh," but yes, it was out in the Tribune today.
And they just put it in the next door blanket.
And what are they saying?
Nothing yet. They just posted it. Like,
who
afterwards.
Did? Who posted?
Can we get your name?
With no comment?
It said, in case you missed today's tribute, Chicago Tribune article about the fate of the FLU Booth Cottage at 239 Franklin.
All right. Okay, but second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
All right.
Okay, motion passes.